Hello and thank you so much for joining me on the show today. This is the Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Undefeated, and I'm your host for today and the coming weeks. Hello, and thank you once again for joining me here on the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. It's a great pleasure to have you joining us, to giving up your time to listen to what we have to say. And we've got a really packed show today. I'm going to be going straight into the song before we have our guest on, because it is just so, there's so much fantastic information that she was able to give us. It is the beginning of autumn, of course. I'm recording this on the 22nd of September. And there is just so much happening in my life at the moment. It's just crazy. But anyway, I want to kick off the show this week with a song which has been chosen by our guest, and then we're going to go straight into that interview. The song is called The Long and Winding Road, and it's by no other than the Beatles. I hope you enjoy it, and try and think during it, you know, what could she be talking about? She chose this song. Is it something to do with the topic, or is it something else? Well, give it some thought as you listen to the song. And all will be revealed as to why she chose it after it. Enjoy. The Beatles, The Long and Winding Road.
The long and winding road. Disappear. I've seen that road before. It always leads me here. Lead me to your door. The wild and windy crying for the day. Why leave me standing here? Let me know the way. Many times I've been alone, and many times I've cried.
That was The Long and Winding Road by, of course, The Beatles. You're listening to The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. Welcome to the show if you've just joined us during that song. We've got a great interview up ahead of us right now. And I just want to welcome you to the show, Julie Gould, who's going to be talking to us about a particular condition, which is pretty nasty and seems to be very misunderstood. And statistically, there's a good chance that quite a few of your listeners are actually suffering from this because it's a pretty common condition.
And she's here to talk about something which I'm guessing that quite a lot of you probably actually are suffering from. And she's got a very interesting take on it because there doesn't seem to be a lot. Well, I'll leave her to talk about that. Julie, first of all, tell me, please, why do you choose that song?
Two reasons. I'm originally from Liverpool. I was born and bred.
That's a good one.
So the Beatles, very close to my heart. I love the song, but the message in the song is very appropriate for restless legs, because if you have it, you will spend a lot of time walking, because that's the only way you can relieve the symptoms. You'll be up in the middle of the night, walking up and down the corridors of your house, and it is a long and winding road. So that's why I chose it.
That's an even better reason, I guess, for choosing it. So thank you for your choice there. It means that the listeners don't have to put up with my choices all the time. Okay, so you mentioned restless legs there, otherwise known as RLS and otherwise known, I believe, as Willis-Ekman disease. That's another name for it. I guess that possibly they may have done a bit of research into it, those two, have they? Or?
Dr. Willis was a 17th century doctor in London.
And okay.
He was the first doctor who diagnosed the condition.
Okay.
He found it in one of his patients, and he described it as torture and like being worse than on the rack. And I think that's absolutely appropriate.
Wow. Okay. So you're obviously speaking today as an expert, but as an expert who has been experiencing it and therefore been looking into it because you've been so frustrated, I believe. But you're also, you must be an expert as well, because I think yourself and another couple of people, ladies, I believe, have just recently had an article published in the medical journal The Lancet.
Yeah, we did.
Wow.
We are all non-medics. But we decided that because of the lack of knowledge amongst GPs, neurologists, and the medical profession as a whole, that the only way we could get anywhere is to research this condition extensively. So that's what we've done. We've read every research paper we can find. We're in touch with top experts in the USA, and we read a fabulous book, which is by one of the top experts, which is The Clinical Management of RLS. So we have read up extensively. So we're what is known as patient experts. And we thought, well, we can't get through to the medical profession, so we'll write an article. And that's what we did. And the neurology section of The Lancet took the article, made very few changes, and published it. So we're absolutely delighted.
Yeah, that's good. And have you had much feedback from about actual doctors who are sort of grateful for it? Or
zero. Deathly silence.
Okay. So hats off to The Lancet for publishing it, but the sounds like the readers need to sit up and take note.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's hope we can help in that respect, both helping individuals who are suffering with a condition that maybe you can share some stuff that might help them, but also maybe we'll get some GPs. If we push this out on social media a little bit, maybe we'll get some GPs and people listening in and on the quiet, making some changes.
That would be brilliant.
So please, just tell me a little bit about your journey, because you it's correct to say, are a sufferer. I think in this case, sometimes you say people suffer with diabetes or something like that, and they maybe don't actually feel that they're suffering, that it is a disease and they've got it, but in your case, if it's like being put on a rack, then you're suffering. Tell us a little bit about your history there, please.
I was first diagnosed with RLS during my second pregnancy, and it is extremely common in pregnancy.
Okay.
Usually due to a lack of iron. And that is the very first thing that doctors should look out for. And they don't. But the very first thing is to look at the serum ferritin, which is usually low in pregnant women.
Mm-hmm.
That was not picked up in my case. And I was put straight on medication. And I regret that to this day, because the medication they give you is a class called dopamine agonists. And I'm sure many of your listeners who've got RLS are familiar with those drugs. They are fantastic. They're miraculous. As soon as you take them, they completely resolve the condition. The problem is they have dreadful side effects, which I can talk about later. But that's one of the first things you should look out for is iron. So I was diagnosed during pregnancy, put on dopamine agonists, spent 10 years on them, and then I developed a side effect which is called augmentation.
Mm.
Now, you mentioned that to a GP and they won't have a clue what you're talking about. They've never been taught RLS. It's not included on the medical curriculum at universities or during GP training, so you won't expect them to know what it means. It is what it sounds like, an increase. It increases the severity of the symptoms, and I'm saved by about 1,000%. So not only do you suffer this dreadful, horrible sensation, but it starts to move around your body. So it moves to your arms, your hands, your shoulders. I even had it in my face. It was that bad.
Wow.
You go back to your GP and you say, oh my God, you know, these drugs aren't working anymore. And it's moving to other body parts. And because the GP has no knowledge of the condition, they say, oh, let's increase the dose. Now, if you know anything about RLS, which I now do, that is the worst possible thing you can do. It's described as pouring gasoline on the flames by the experts in the US, and that is exactly what it does. You increase the dose, it goes through the stratosphere, and you end up finding yourself unable to sit still during the day, during the afternoon. You're up walking at night. You will get some sleep, but the intensity of the feelings is just horrible.
Mm.
And the only thing you can do is to taper the drug. You have to get off it very slowly. And anyone who's been through that will tell you it is hell on earth. You will usually go through 4 weeks of really, really intense symptoms. You'll get little or no sleep. You will think you're going crazy. It's been likened, no, it's worse than getting off heroin or crystal meth. That's what the experts are saying.
This is coming off the dopamine.
It's just horrendous. And what you really need to get through it is a strong opioid. Well, you try getting that from a GP in the UK when they don't understand what RLS is, never heard of augmentation, and they really don't understand what you're going through. It's that bad.
I suppose the first question I need to ask, I want to come to where people can go to get a bit of help on this, but before that, how common is this?
It's extremely common. It is the most common neurological disease in the world. In the USA, there are 12 million sufferers. In the UK, there are 1 million sufferers. So please explain to me, why is it not on the medical curriculum? It's an extremely common disease. It has the highest rate of suicide of any other neurological condition. And there are studies to back that up. Now, hopefully that will make the medical profession say, we need to do something about this. We need to train the medical profession to recognize it, diagnose it correctly, and treat it.
Mm. Well, I suppose as podiatrists, we do get people in. We don't get people that commonly coming in with complaining of that. So I guess they've gone to the GP for that. But it would be definitely useful for us to be trained in it as well. And yeah, maybe we can have you even come and talk to some of the local groups or something like that. Especially with the beauty of Zoom, of course. that would be good. So 1.6 million. And you mentioned earlier on pregnancy.
Yeah.
That's sort of obviously pointing towards ladies. But I remember seeing a program, I think it was last year, there was a program on TV about this, about restless leg syndrome. I watched it. I often don't watch things all the way through. I watched that the whole way through, and it was really, really, well, moving and intense. You weren't on that, were you?
No, I
mean, I can't remember what program it was, but I'm sure you'll have seen it. There are men on there with it as well, so it's obviously it can be both sexes then, obviously.
Yeah, it affects women more than men, as most of these types of diseases. But yes, men are affected as well.
Okay.
It's a ratio of about 3 to 1. Right. Yeah.
So we've got some listeners, let's assume, that have got this syndrome and they are on the dopamine and they are feeling good because the doctor's given it and everything's going smoothly. And what you're saying is that you may be okay, but you may get to a point where you get this augmentation or other side effects. What should they be, not feeling, but what should they be doing? Should they just sit back and wait, or is there something they can do?
I think the consensus at the moment is keep the dose as low as possible. Mm. If you're on those drugs at the moment, keep the dose as low as possible to control the condition. If they stop working, do not ever increase the dose.
Right.
Because as soon as you start to increase the dose, the likelihood of augmentation, it's going to happen. So what you should do is keep the dose as low as possible and maybe even think about slowly, slowly reducing it. And for safety, you have to reduce it as slowly as possible.
Mm.
I won't go into medication dosage and
time. Yeah.
Low as you possibly can. And usually with the help of a strong opioid painkiller, because you will have an exacerbation of the symptoms.
Mm.
But that's if you're on those medications. In America now, they've just released the latest guidelines.
Okay.
And that is to say, do not prescribe these drugs as first-line treatment.
Right.
Because they're aware of the dangers, not only of augmentation, but impulse control disorder. That is not as rare as people make out. That's where you develop impulse control disorders like gambling, shopping out of control, drug addiction, alcoholism, hypersexuality, and that is a known side effect. Now, if that happens, then you should definitely reduce the dose and get off the drugs.
Right.
We've had people who've literally lost their homes, their marriages, and they're unaware that it's the drugs that are causing this. So
right.
That's another serious side effect of them, and that's why they're no longer recommended first-line treatment. The new first-line treatment is pregabalin, which is an alpha-2-delta ligand. But a lot of people won't even need medications, because if you can get your iron levels up and your serum ferritin up, that will resolve RLS in the majority of cases. And then
So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So iron levels up, I assume, is iron supplements and helping ways that you can actually absorb that iron better. Tell me what is advised in that respect.
Well, they don't know why raising iron is effective, but there's a suggestion that it's the brain iron levels that are at fault in RLS, and that for some reason we can't get iron from the blood into the brain.
Okay.
That's why we have the problem. That's one hypothesis. So they have now discovered that if you can raise serum ferritin and serum iron levels above certain levels, you will improve RLS in over 60% of cases. So the odds are in your favour. It's the question now is what levels are the best to be achieved, and the experts are in some disagreement about that. If you read in all the textbooks, it will say raise your serum ferritin above 75, but some experts now in the USA are saying that number is irrelevant because it depends on your age and your health conditions, and in fact a lot of their patients need levels to be above 250, above 350. And it's quite hard to get your levels that high by taking oral supplements. So the best way to do it, start off taking oral supplements. First, get your blood tests, then take your oral supplements, but take iron every other day, which again goes against medical best practice. Because studies that show taking every other day actually raises your levels faster and higher than if you take it every night. So by all means, take oral supplements, but some people might need an IV infusion of iron. And again, in the United States, that is now standard treatment. You'll go in and you'll have an iron infusion of Injectafer. That's what it's called. I think it's ferrous. There's a technical name for it. If you can get that infusion, your levels will go right up very quickly. It's not going to help everyone, but it will help 60%. So try that first. So, and there are other lifestyle changes you can make.
Okay.
A lot of people find that food or alcohol is a trigger. So some people find sugar, caffeine, alcohol will actually cause the RLS. So try that first of all. Does that help? And then you get another subset of people who find that magnesium helps them. So they'll take magnesium supplements at night. The vast majority with severe RLS, that's a waste of time. But if you've got mild RLS and you can deal with it by these simple lifestyle changes, do it. And then you can avoid medication.
Does it tend to be a progressive disease?
Yes, it is. It's one of these chronic progressive neurological conditions. And as you get older, yes, it worsens.
Okay. And is it quite common to get it at an older age rather than a younger age?
Not necessarily. You'll find that a lot of people have had it from birth, and you'll find that some people will say, I had it as a child, and I was always known as a very fidgety child, and I was told it was growing pains. And that subtype of person with RLS suffers from primary or idiopathic RLS, and that tends to run in families. But again, the treatments are the same. You know, first check the iron levels. Most cases are caused, possibly their mother was pregnant, had anemia, so the child is born with low iron stores, so they develop RLS. Babies and children can get it. And as a parent, you should watch out for that. You know, if your child is not sleeping and is irritable in the day, start asking questions. It could be RLS, and maybe raising iron levels would really help.
Can you have a sort of a mild form of it that is only triggered for example? Well, I don't think I've got it, but if I'm ever a passenger in a car, when I'm sitting there, I'm tall, I'm 6'4". I my legs always get sort of restless. I want to move them around. I feel, until I watched I wouldn't put my feet up when we're driving, that's for sure. Certainly not when I'm driving, but not when my wife's driving either. I've seen some x-rays of what can happen if you have a crash when your feet are up on the dashboard, and no one wants to do that. But I was, I get this sort of, this restless feeling, I guess, with my lower limb. It just feels like your muscle, it's horrible. But that's the only time I ever would say I get anything that I can remotely think that I can relate to. I'm sure it's nothing compared to what, particularly if it's progressive, that you get. But can things start off mildly? Is that... Yes, no, you're nodding your head. I'm getting worried now.
You get people... There are some people who'll only get it once every 2 months. They'll have a glass of red wine, and that's the trigger. Right. And they'll have an evening where they have this feeling in their legs. I mean, people will say, what is RLS? It is basically, it's an unbearable sensation, usually in your lower limbs. Mm. And people describe it as like bugs crawling in their skin, or like being a coil that's really, really tightly wound up, just waiting to be sprung, but never released. Other people describe it as like fizzing wine or soda in their legs. So that's the first problem, trying to describe it to someone else. It's really quite difficult. But that sensation, usually, that's the first diagnostic tool, is that you get this unbearable sensation in your lower limbs. Mm. The second diagnostic tool is that sensation is relieved by movement. So if you move your leg or you walk around, the sensation disappears. Mm. The third is that it's worse in the evening or at night. And that it can't be accounted for by any other condition like peripheral neuropathy. Mm. So diagnosing is difficult, but and it can only be done by taking a case history. There are no tests. So if anyone says to you, go to have your nerves tested, that's a waste of time. That doesn't diagnose restless legs. It could only be taken by asking the patient, what do you feel? And is that sensation unbearable? And is it removed by moving? And if yes, you move and it disappears, it's highly likely to be RLS.
Does it then get worse if you have been moving? So, like, for example, if you feel that way and you go for a nice long walk and you feel okay-ish and then you sit down,
That's an interesting one, because actually aerobic exercise, if you've got severe RLS, can actually make it worse. Okay. So what I say to do is, if you're going to do aerobic exercise, do it in the morning or the afternoon. And try to do weightlifting, because muscles actually store dopamine, and the dopamine can actually help relieve the RLS sensations. But by moving, I don't mean going off exercising. It's literally just standing up and jiggling about or walking about. And as you're doing that, you don't feel the sensations. The same as when you're lying in bed. That's when it will start off. When you try to sleep, put your head down, you try to sleep, and it starts up. So you can't sleep. So it is a sleep disorder as well as a neurological disease. That's when you find yourself kicking your legs in bed to relieve the horrible sensations.
My wife will probably say, well, he's definitely got it. He's always kicking me in bed. But I don't have any problem with sleeping. I sleep like a log.
You might have it because of the...
No, I'm going to speak against that. Well, I have not got it. No. So you were going to say, because other people might be listening saying, oh, yeah, but Peter, what you just said, I can relate to that. What were you going to say?
Another part of the condition is a lot of people have periodic leg movement during sleep, which is very similar to restless leg syndrome, but the sufferers don't feel it during the day. They're not aware of it, but they're kicking around in the bed.
The partner's aware of it.
their partners will tell them, oh my God, you know, you kicked me all night long. And that's how they realise there's something wrong, you know, that they can't keep still in bed. And they think they're sleeping, but in fact, waking up not fully refreshed. And that is treated in exactly the same way as RLS. First, check the iron levels.
Right.
And look out for other medications as well. That's another common trigger. There are lots of medications that can actually cause or trigger the disease. And again, sadly, doctors don't know about them. But antihistamines are a classic medication to avoid. Avoid all sedating antihistamines. So people will find that they take Benadryl or Nitol, all those sort of drugs. They all contain sedating antihistamines and they'll all make RLS worse. So that's to be avoided.
So that could tip you over. You might have no symptoms. You take that for your hay fever and then you start getting...
Exactly.
And you put it down to just being irritable because of the hay fever, maybe.
Exactly. But, the other class of medications that worsen the condition are antidepressants.
Right.
So all antidepressants, I think there are only two that are safe, but all antidepressants will make it worse. If you're going in for surgery in the hospital, most of the anti-nauseates, you know, the seasickness or the anti-nauseate medication they give you, that will also trigger RLS. So first of all, if you've got RLS, check what medications you're taking over the counter and eliminate them because that may completely resolve your RLS.
Is there somewhere that people can go to actually, apart from listening to our show, but where they can go and they can sort of like think, okay, I've got, you know, maybe they've got RLS and they want to know, my doctor wants to give me this for something else, but I know it's likely to trigger. Is there somewhere they can go and find this sort of information in a reliable source?
There are only two organisations that I'm aware of. One is a very, very small UK charity, which is RLS UK.
Okay.
It's funded, but it's not funded at all. It's a voluntary charity. Right. Four or five people run it, and they're all volunteers who have RLS. Mm-hmm. And they've set up the website, and they also run the help forum linked to that website, which is called Health Unlocked. And it's a great website because you can post your question, and the people on there, I guarantee, will know a lot more than any GP or neurologist because they've got the time to research it, and they've got the condition, so they know all the latest information. The other really good help site is a US help site, which is rls.org. And that's the US Foundation. And the problem with that is to access the website and the information, you have to join, and it costs $35 if you're a US citizen, $45 if you're in the UK. But it is really well worth the money if you are a chronic RLS sufferer, because
this is if you want to do what? If you want to become a common now at the moment, if you want to become a member, is it that you?
And you get access to their website. You get access to a quarterly magazine, which is really informative. It has all the latest research and medical information.
Right.
You get access to free webinars by the top US experts, and you can send questions in, and the experts will answer your questions online. And there's also another brilliant website run by a doctor in California, and that's Dr. Mark Buckfuhrer, who's I can only describe him as a saint. you sent an email to this doctor, and even though he's American, you would expect him to charge $300 a pop. He will respond to you within 2 to 3 hours with, with the answer to your question.
Wow.
He does that for free. And on his website, he has lots of really helpful information. And his website is rls.help.org. Okay. And any questions, send them to him and he will answer. So those are the only three areas of help in the UK. There are NICE guidelines, as in National Institute for Clinical Excellence. Mm. And they're actually quite good for the UK. They are about 5 to 10 years behind the US. Well, that's inevitable.
Yeah.
So, for example, they still talk about the dopamine agonists as first-line treatment. But they are a good starting point. So look up the NICE guidelines. And the NHS has actually also got a very good information page on RLS. And all I would say is it's just a shame that GPs don't look at it.
Maybe they will after this. We'll help you in your campaign to do that.
I love my GP. My GP has been brilliant, but I know from the Help Forum that so many people say things like, my GP refuses to listen to what I'm saying. They refuse to accept that it's a real condition. They're saying it's all in my head. And that's just got to stop. You know, it is real. The NHS says it's real. NICE says it's real. So please, GPs, look at the guidelines.
Is there any hereditary factors involved in it? I mean, there are.
Okay. There is definitely a familial link for about 50% of sufferers.
Wow. Okay. And if you intervene early with, for example, iron supplements that might stop it from ever emerging?
I think so, yes. I mean, definitely. The first thing you should do is look at your iron levels, get blood tests, and don't listen to what the doctor tells you the results are, because your doctor will say, oh, your iron levels are fine, they're completely normal. What's normal for someone who doesn't suffer from RLS is completely different to that required for someone who suffers from RLS. So you've got to check the actual numbers and ask for a printout and look at the figures.
So if you've got RLS, you basically need to have a higher level of iron in your blood than a non-sufferer.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, this is great. I'm learning loads. I'll be able to talk with my patients about this, and it's great. Thank you. I do a show as well called the Diabetes Show, by the way. So, and I noticed in, I think it was in your email, that you diabetes can be linked in some way or trigger or.
It's very common in patients with diabetes, because if you have diabetes, you're more likely to have vascular problems and peripheral neuropathy. And those are triggers for RLS. So, yes, you get diabetes patients. I would imagine quite a lot of them will have RLS. Yeah.
And you mentioned about I think it's to do with iron levels in the brain, I believe. Does that mean that maybe somebody who has vascular dementia or something like that is likely to become very, very restless as well, or is that?
Again, it's interesting. There is a term amongst dementia patients. I think they call them sundowners. It's dementia patients you'll often find will walk around a lot at night. A lot of people are beginning to wonder, is it because they've got restless leg syndrome, but they can't tell anyone what they're feeling or suffering, and they're walking around to relieve the sensation. That is actually a horrible thought, that someone is suffering those unbearable sensations but doesn't have the capacity to tell anyone about it, medication to help. That really is a horrible thought.
Okay, so that might be worth people trying out, you know, up the iron levels on and see if they're less restless, maybe. I don't know. So with the Diabetes Show, I often talk to people about testing and measuring what's going to affect your blood sugars, what's going to do this. And I'm getting that sort of feel from what you've been saying, is that some things can trigger, that glass of wine might trigger it. If you are getting it, maybe keep a diary of when you're at its worst and what you've, and then maybe cut things out. I would normally say there with the diabetes one, and I'm sure it'll be the same, don't go trying cutting out four or five different things all at the same time. Do them one at a time so you know which one's going to work, yeah?
I couldn't agree more. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Okay. And in your journey at the moment, I'm hoping for your sake that you're not at the peak of the problem, that you've had some really dark times in the past with how it's been when you were coming off the dopamine drugs. What sort of level of, how does it affect you at the moment, if at all?
Well, I have had an absolutely miraculous time for the last 8 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, after all my research, as I said to you, I spent 10 years on the dopamine agonists. Then I went through withdrawal, which was quite simply hell on earth. And quite frankly, I didn't nearly make it through. There were times when I seriously, logically considered suicide. It was that bad.
Wow.
I'm a very rational person. I've never suffered depression, but it was a very dark, dark time. I think anyone who's been through dopamine agonist withdrawal would agree with that. Then I went on the next category of drugs, which they recommend, which is the Delta 2 alpha ligands, which are basically anti-epileptic drugs like pregabalin and gabapentin. And I tried those. I was on those for 2-3 years, didn't do anything. They controlled it to an extent. I was able to get about 2 hours in one go at night. Then I'd wake up, then I'd get 1 hour, then I'd wake up, then I'd get half an hour, then I'd wake up. So very, very disrupted sleep. It was very torturous. Then I tried low-dose opioids, OxyContin, and again, didn't really do much. Then medical cannabis became available, and because I've got MS as well, I qualified automatically for medical cannabis, and I didn't want to use it for any symptom other than to try and get sleep.
Yeah.
And so they gave me cannabis oil with THC in it, and for the first time in, I'd say, about 10 years, I got 3 hours sleep in one go, and that was... whoa, this is fantastic. I've got 3 hours sleep in one session. So
yeah.
I was delighted with that. I thought it was a breakthrough. And then someone on my website basically said, I really think you should look at this drug. I've been trying it and it has worked fantastically. And I was in the same position as you. And it's a drug called buprenorphine. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. It could be buprenorphine, but I think it's buprenorphine. And it's a low-dose opioid that's used to get heroin addicts off heroin, very similar to methadone. And you use it at very, very low doses. And for some reason, because it affects different receptors in the brain, different opioid receptors, it can work for people with severe refractory RLS when nothing else has helped. So I asked my neurologist for it, and he was very resistant at first. He had a bit of a hissy fit and said that, really strong opioid, you don't need to take that, blah, blah, blah. But when I spoke to Dr. Buckfuhrer, the US expert, he was saying, look, you're not getting adequate sleep. Any doctor who tells you that 3 hours, 4 hours is adequate doesn't know what they're talking about. Mm. You should consider this drug. So yes, I went on it. I eventually got my GP to agree. She was fantastic. I cannot commend her highly enough. She listened to everything I had to say. She said, just send me what you've got. I'll have a quick look through it. Let's put you on a 3-week trial and we'll see how you go. The first night I took it, I slept straight through for 8 hours.
Wow.
Zero RLS. Now, normally every day I'd have 2 hours in the early evening of severe RLS. So I'd just have to walk up and down for 2 hours. Then I'd take my drugs, they'd kick in, and then I'd go through this disrupted sleep. I took this buprenorphine and I was out for 8 hours. It was miraculous.
Wow, yeah.
I've been on it now for 8 weeks and I have had no RLS at all. I have slept solidly 8 hours every single night. It has been miraculous.
Wow.
Now, I want to make it my mission for all those people out there, and there are thousands and thousands who are not getting adequate sleep.
Hmm.
The drugs they're on are not effective. They're not helping.
Hmm.
Why not make this drug available? It's very cheap. You use it at extremely low dose. There'll be a lot of stigma around opioid addiction. Well, people on RLS were addicted to dopamine agonists, far worse than opioids. So let's put things in perspective. Anyone with a serious health condition is dependent on their meds in the same way that a diabetic has to take insulin. sadly, we're going to have to take these medications if we want to sleep. So why not give this, you know, monitor the patient. If there's no history of abuse, it's safe and effective. And there are lots of studies in the US to show that low-dose opioids are safe, effective, and they work. So wow. I want to spread the word. And every drug has side effects. I want to put that
I was about to say, what's the trade-off?
Every drug has side effects. When I started on the buprenorphine, I suffered dreadful nausea. I woke up the next day, I thought, I feel dreadful. And I didn't eat for about a week. I felt so ill. And apparently that's quite common as your body gets used to it. But for me, it was the last chance saloon. I thought, if this doesn't work, that's it. This is the rest of my life of 3 hours a night sleep and then 1 hour, then half an hour. I just didn't want to face that. So I thought, I'm going to soldier through, put up with the nausea, see if I can get through it. And then I had a brainwave that chemo patients use cannabis for nausea. And I had my medical cannabis, so I started taking it again. And I woke up without the nausea. So far, I've got zero side effects. I'm sleeping 8 hours a night. It's highly effective. And I actually emailed the neurologist who had said, I don't think you should be taking it. And he was actually stunned at how my RLS had decreased from 36 out of 40 on the scale of severity to zero. Literally overnight, from 36 to zero. And he said, that is quite incredible. I'd quite like to do studies on this. And I said, great, let's get trials going. And he said, the only problem is there's no money. There is no money in the UK to carry out the studies. So if anyone out there has got £50,000 to £100,000 to fund trials on buprenorphine and methadone, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, there's probably people who are suffering who've got that sort of money even. So maybe that people can come forward with it.
Yeah.
Is there actually is there a GoFundMe page or anything like that yet? Or is that a bit early for that yet?
I haven't. It's a good idea. I might even think about that.
Yeah, okay. Well, but they can pester their, people can pester their doctors or mention it to their doctors. And so what was the name of the actual drug again? We don't want them going and getting methadone and stuff like that. But what was this one?
It's similar to methadone. Methadone is very similar. It's buprenorphine.
Okay, cool. Wow, this has been absolutely fascinating. I'm totally on board with trying to help you with your cause, as it were. Anything else that you want to say? Because you've covered loads and loads of stuff there. I think, did you mention a minute ago that you have a website?
No, it's RLS UK.
RLS UK one, right, okay. And people can find out about this sort of stuff on there and on the other ones you mentioned as well over in RLS.org.
Yeah.
And RLSHelp.org.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was looking at them, and they but not the help one because I didn't know about that one, but the other two I was looking at last night preparing. You might not be able to tell, but I was preparing. I did prepare for this. And they were fascinating as well, but you've taken it to a whole other level, so thank you for that. Anything that I haven't, I know there's things I haven't covered, but I know that time's ticking on and my kids are hungry, apart from anything else. Anything that you really feel, you know what, I really wanted him to ask that and he hasn't done, or that we should be talking about?
I don't think so. I think you've covered most of the points I would want to bring up about it, yeah.
Okay, cool. Great, well, I know what we haven't talked about. It's a special day next week, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is. The 23rd of September is RLS Awareness Day. So if you have RLS, by all means, check out those websites. Look up the NICE guidelines, the NHS guidelines, and try and help spread the word.
Okay. Is that a UK only or is that international?
It's international.
International awareness. Yeah. Okay, cool. Cool. Well, I think I've had that many pages of notes. Okay, I think we'll call it a day for now then, if that's okay with you. We'll no doubt have you back on here again at some point in the future, hopefully when you've been victorious in getting some sort of research done over here on that. The only really thing that remains is for you to introduce your second song and why you chose that one, please.
My second song is Dancing Queen by ABBA. And I chose that because it is a song close to my heart. It talks about Dancing Queen, only 17, and I was 17 at the time it came out.
Okay.
Absolutely loved it. And it's the one song guaranteed to get everyone in the UK up on the dance floor.
Brilliant. Very good tune and a nice upbeat way to end the show. Thank you so much for your time, and I wish you all the best and hope that this regime that you're on continues for the rest of your life, giving you peace and suffering.
Thank you for letting me talk about RLS.
No worries, it's a pleasure. Take good care. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. I'm just
that was ABBA and Dancing Queen, of course, and I bet many of you are up on your feet dancing away to that tune, or tapping your fingers or tapping your feet. Maybe a few of you have had your toes trodden on by whoever's dancing with you. If I was dancing with someone, I probably would be treading on my toes, as my wife is witness to. Anyway, I hope that you have enjoyed the show. I'm sure that many of you will have got something from it, both now and possibly in the future. You'll remember, if you do are unfortunate enough to get this condition, hopefully you'll remember some of the things that have been said. Maybe you know somebody who's got this condition. Go and tell them about the things that Julie said. Tell them about the show. Get them to listen to it, because I think there's a lot of people suffering out there who maybe don't need to suffer, and the medics just aren't aware of what can be done. So thank you very much, Julie, again, for sharing your story there. And we hope that your condition continues to be controlled well and improve. Anyway, that's it for this week. Have a fantastic week. Stay blessed and enjoy life. You've been listening to Peter Olson here on The Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio. And that is it for this week's show. You've been listening to Peter Olson with The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say have a fantastic week. Stay safe in the diabetes sweet spot, living the ideal diabetic lifestyle. I look forward to sharing more with you next week. Take good care and God bless.